In town.
It has risen.
And that's right. John Iderol also here. Whatever.
Yeah. I rose too. Damn it. Got up for this shit.
So this is a fun show in a couple different regards. One, format wise, we're doing fun little power panels throughout the week. Dave is in town. We're doing this in the first hour. Jordan Chariton is here. He's going to be in the second hour. We've decided, let's go nuts. Let's do mainly political stories for both hours for the next couple of days. Although, God, there was a story about tracking your sex toys. There's apparently smart sex toys. I'm used to the dumb ones, but and they are actually even tracking those. And I don't know if Obama's taking pictures through them. But anyway, that story, unfortunately, we won't get to today, even though that's super fun.
Don't worry, we're keeping our eyes on it, though, okay? We're not going to let this one
slide by.
Yeah.
Okay. I know we keep going in and out of that story, but we'll get to it another day.
Christ.
Okay, anyways, now the other reason why this show is fun, interesting, is there are several stories in this lineup that are fascinating. They are super fascinating. The Breitbart, story of shiving Paul Ryan is madness. It's an amazing story. So we're gonna get to that soon. And then the Fukushima story in the second hour. Unbelievable, you literally won't believe the facts that are coming out of that.
I can't believe I got it on the rundown.
Yeah, well look guys, you know, every once in a while I promise you something like this, somebody will have a reaction of like, no. And I deliver, don't I? When we tell you the Fukushima story, including the radioactive boars, but that's like the least interesting part of the story. Mm-hmm. You're gonna be like, no, that's unbelievable. So that's in the second hour, and then the Jared Kushner deal with China. Oh, that stinks to speaking of hog heaven, no, high heaven.
Radioactive hog heaven.
That's right. So hell of a lot to get to, including a fun poll in the show. All right, so having said that, David, welcome. John, go forward.
Okay, but we are going to be starting off with another lightning round. A few stories
wanted
to make sure we got to. As you probably know, especially if you're on the East Coast, there is a winter storm Stella, which apparently, as is often the case, not as bad as people thought it was going to be. Of course, they have to err on the side of caution because people's lives are at stake. So it wasn't as bad as they thought, but there are still millions of people up and down the East Coast that are on blizzard warning right now. And between 8,000 and 9,000 flights have already been canceled as of earlier today. So that is something that is still very much a reality if you're living on the East Coast. A little bit of good news for you. Six European countries are coming together in a multi-billion-dollar project to create a massive artificial island and a wind farm of thousands of turbines that's going to be positioned in the middle of basically the sea bordering all of those countries. It is going to provide enough power to for 80 million people in those six countries, which I find in seeing where our climate policy and energy policy is going in this country and where it will likely to go for 4 to 8 years, that is such an inspiration that six countries can come together that way.
Well, it does seem like a bit of a windfall for those countries. Okay, in all seriousness, we're gonna let them beat us like that? America should be number one in sustainable energy, okay? So I'm looking at you, America. Do you have what it takes to be number one in sustainable energy? Or are you gonna let the Norway beat us? Norway? Norway or our way? I say our way.
In the Netherlands right now, they're saying, you know, we're getting beaten by the US on clean coal. They've got cleaner coal than us. Probably not.
Let them beat us on that. That's okay.
Exactly. That would be okay. At George Washington University, they're currently investigating white supremacist flyers that have been left around the campus targeting undocumented immigrants with such phrases as, America is a white nation, with a couple of very white faces. And quote, quote, we have a right to exist. And so obviously there's free speech, but people are a little bit concerned about it. And so they are looking into that in George Washington University right now.
Can I say, there's nobody more obsessed with sex than white supremacists. Because they're always like, we have a right to exist. Well, who's stopping you, dude? Who's trying to kill you? Nobody, right? What they mean by that is like, please, are white women stop having sex with minorities instead of us?
You think it's we have a right to get laid?
That's exactly what it is.
And by the way, they are the same people who are constantly focused on cuckoldry. Oh God, somebody might come for our wives. Yeah. That's not a healthy worldview, people. Okay.
There might be another reason why they think about cuckolding every single day. Anyway.
There might be. Okay. Sean Spicer, once again earlier today at the White House press briefing, declined an opportunity that was given to him to condemn the remarks of Steve King, his quote, other people's babies racist comments. Yesterday he said they're going to wait and see what happens and let people say what they really meant. In the interim, Steve King said, I meant what I said. And now the White House is like, no, we apparently don't have any problem with it.
Yeah.
And finally, for the first time since 2012, Somali pirates have hijacked a commercial ship. This one, the Aris 13 of Sri Lanka. There had actually been 4 years with no pirate successful hijackings. And that is currently ongoing. Security forces have been dispatched to the region to retake the ship and rescue its crew.
The pirates are ascendant, whether it is the pirate party in Iceland that has almost taken over the country, the whole country, not just the ship, but they're a legitimate party over there, or the literal pirates that are back from Somalia. And it might be related to another larger story we're going to do in the show today, which is about the famine in Somalia, thereby driving people to desperation. But either way, two things are on the rise, white supremacists and pirates. If we could only get them to fight, yeah, I think that'd be kind of badass, and I have a good sense of who would win.
That sounds like the next season of Game of Thrones.
Oh, yeah,
that's true. But yeah, I it's amazing that there can be these huge shifts that you just never hear about. Like, we talked about how the teen arrest rate is a third of what it was just 10 years ago for both general crime and violent crime as well. I don't think anybody would have guessed that or thought, based on the news they're seeing, that was going on. And then also that in a 5-year span, we went from several hundred attempted or successful Somali pirate attacks down to less than 10. And I had no idea. And I saw Captain Phillips. They didn't even mention at the end of that.
I think it was largely Tom Hanks.
There's too much heat right now, thanks to Oscar season. We're going to back off for a few years. But hopefully they're able to retake the ship. Okay, with that, why don't we turn to some of the biggest domestic political stories of the day. The GOP was quick to criticize the CBO report on the likely effects, both in terms of loss of coverage and also the financial impacts of the repeal and replacement of the Affordable Care Act. And they were saying that it was political and inaccurate. It had flawed assumptions. You couldn't trust it. And, you know, who trusts that guy that's running the CBO? What was he? Well, he was actually appointed by a Republican. Well, whatever, you still can't trust him. And those arguments, unfortunately for them, were undercut later on in the day when a White House report of the likely effects actually turned out to be more critical, harsher than the CBO's. And we're going to give you that information now. The analysis found that under the Affordable Health Care Act, the American Health Care Act, the coverage losses would include $17 million for Medicaid, $6 million in the individual market, and $3 million in employer-based plans over the course of 10 years. If you add those up, that's actually a couple of million more people than the CBO thought would eventually lose out on access to health insurance. And again, that is the White House analysis coming out of the Office of Management and Budget.
Okay, a quick note on that. As John alluded to, the guy who runs the CBO is a conservative economist that was approved, sanctioned by Price, who's now the head of Health and Human Services for the Trump administration.
Yeah.
So, oops, when they say that it's biased or it's unreliable, they're talking about their own guy. Now, speaking of their own guy, the guy who runs OMB that came out with the analysis that says, no, not 24 million people losing insurance, 26 million people losing insurance. That's Mick Mulvaney. That's Trump's main guy that John's going to tell you right now is going like, oh no, everything's going to be fine. It's your office that said it's going to be worse than even the CBO said it was.
Exactly. So. Yeah, and one of the things, one of the reasons that they chose this guy to head it up is that he is a big fan of dynamic scoring, which we've talked about. This idea that when we're trying to figure out the likely economic impacts of a law, you tell us what you think it, what effect it's going to have on the economy, and we'll factor those in. If you say that a tax cut is going to generate economic activity, even if everything we've seen in the past 50 years tells us opposite, we will pretend that that's going to happen and make the numbers look better for you. But even with that, it's an absolute disaster of a law. And that's the guy that they're now criticizing. So by the way, as a final result of this, coming from that report out of the White House, which by the way was shared with Politico and they made the information public, there will be a total of 54 million individuals in 2026 that are uninsured at that point, nearly double what would be projected under current law. But as Cenk pointed out, Mick Mulvaney is responding to this. We're gonna have his video in just a second. Now, the White House Communications Director, Michael Dubke, said that the information we're talking about right now is, quote, not an analysis of the bill in any way whatsoever. It is simply us trying to predict what the CBO is going to say using the CBO's methodology. But that's interesting because the Brookings Institute just a week or two ago also attempted to predict it and had a far lower number. And they're not in their analysis saying we're using their methodology and here is why that methodology is flawed. Okay? They're not making that case. They're simply asserting that it's flawed. They're not explaining why we should believe that. But again, let's go to Mick Mulvaney, and here is his continuing criticism of the CBO.
And what is your take on the CBO scoring?
Good morning from Washington, where according to the CBO, it's sunny and 75 degrees this morning. It's too easy. What is our take on the report? Is exactly what we expected to see. I was surprised to hear the word damage control used so many times in that previous report. That's just not right. This is exactly what we thought the CBO would come forth with. They're terrible at counting coverage. The CBO report is full of errors, not errors. They're just bad assumptions like that. It's the only way you can get to these bizarre numbers.
Now, as we pointed out, there are bad assumptions, but it's not the ones that he disagrees with.
Have you noticed that one of the weird points about this is that they're saying that the CBO overestimated how many people would be covered by the exchanges in Obamacare? So mm-hmm. their first criticism was CBO is too mm-hmm. rosy about how much coverage Obamacare will create. And now they're saying CBO is overestimating how many people will lose coverage. So my question for them is sort of like, well, does CBO estimate too much coverage or too little coverage? Like you just spent a long time saying CBO was too rosy in how much Obamacare would cover, and now you're saying it's overestimating how many people will lose coverage. So they're it's like the opposite arguments that they're
making. So if you were talking about an economic analysis, people would ask that question and go, hey, let's talk about the assumptions that Mulvaney just mentioned. What economic assumptions did you make? And if you made the same ones, then it would be, then actually the conclusion, logical conclusion is there's actually going to be even more uninsured people than they're estimating. But that is not who they're trying to appeal to. They're trying to appeal to Trump voters on a political level and go, oh yeah, CBO, the Obama guys. Mm-hmm. Even though it's actually a conservative approved by the Republicans, oh yeah, they're gonna cheat in favor of Obama. Well, can you show us how they would do that? Like, what would you change in the assumptions? Now, luckily, they have their own Office of Management and Budget, the OMB that guy Mulvaney runs. Now, let's break down whether it really was an estimate of what the CBO would come out with or their own estimate. Because they now say, no, we were just trying to estimate. So, number one, Politico has the documents themselves and they say, no, it was an analysis intended to actually assess the coverage and spending outcomes. So, not true, they have the documents. Okay, but even so, logically, even if you're like, everything is fake news to you because you're a Trump supporter, right? Okay, now how stupid are they politically that their own guy puts out a report that's even worse? Like, wouldn't you think like, oh, if this, we estimated the CBO is gonna come out with a disastrous thing saying we're gonna throw 24 million people to the wolves and they have no insurance. Politically, wouldn't your own guy come out and go, oh no, it's actually 4 million or negative 4 million, we're going to add people. No, instead he's like, oh yeah, it's gonna be 26 million. Mm-hmm. No, you know why? Because they actually did the analysis and it came out to 26 million.
Yeah.
That's why you would never do this politically, because it's not advantageous to you. It makes no sense at all.
Unless you believe the ridiculous things they say about what this bill is going to do. If you actually believe that it won't have a bad impact, if you're Donald Trump and you think that healthcare is just way more complicated than people thought, and I have great ideas, I genuinely believe them, go show me that I'm right, and then lo and behold, it turns out that the numbers are actually far worse for them. That's one possible explanation. But now that stuff is out there, that OMB report is out there, and so Mick Mulvaney is now being asked about it, and here is his attempted evasion.
Your own estimate when you were getting ready for the CBO, and it was more than the CBO came up with in terms of how many people would be uninsured.
One of the differences between the Office of Management and Budget, which I know fairly well by now, and the CBO, is that we admit we don't know how to count coverage. The OMB does not count coverage. But there is no OMB report that says it's worse than the CBO report. We simply don't have the ability to do that.
Does that document exist, and is that what you were doing with it?
I don't know if the document exists because I haven't seen it.
You are the head of OMB. Do you know whether or not this document exists? Because it is supposedly an OMB document that was reviewed by Politico. Because Sean Spicer is saying it's fake, it's false, it's not real.
I don't know if there is an OMB document or not. I have not seen one. I did not ask for one to be done. It's possible it could have been done under the previous administration. I have no idea.
How would the previous administration have done an analysis of a plan they didn't know about yet?
They did, as a matter of fact. Back in January, I think it was Nancy Pelosi.
Oh, you mean in January, not back during the Obama administration. You're saying before you got there.
There was a CBO report out in January that scored repeal with no replace.
Right.
And it showed 20 million of people uncovered and so forth. But no one was offering a repeal with no replace bill at that particular time. It may be that that document is the foundation of the document you mentioned.
All right.
Okay, that was a great follow-up by Chris Cuomo, which doesn't happen often in cable news. And his answer actually makes no sense. I'm impressed that he actually came up with an answer. But he's saying, it might have been this other thing where we repealed it but didn't replace it. No. The OMB document scores this current Republican plan, which clearly did not exist when Obama was in charge. They are desperate to blame everything on Obama, no matter what. Our plan that we just came up with last week, Obama's fault.
The summary of what he said was, we don't know shit, and I don't know shit.
Yeah.
I mean, like literally, he was like, we don't count how many people will be covered, and I don't even know if this document is real. I mean, I guess their answer, their talking point now is, we don't know anything.
We didn't come up with any numbers, and if we had, we don't know how to.
No, but that goes towards the two things that we talk about all the time. One is the incompetence of the Trump administration. You're the head of the OMB. How could you? And it's in the news today. You're about to go on CNN. There's a giant news story about how you guys said there's 26 million people who are going to be uninsured. How could you not know if that document exists or doesn't exist?
That's why you're going on CNN.
Right.
They don't just check in every morning with Mick Mulvaney.
Right. How could you? Okay, so either he's lying, and if you're a Trump supporter, you get it. Either he's lying, or boy, that is incredible incompetence. Mm-hmm. Right? And then secondarily, it's the Republicans' disdain for actually governing. So he says, OMB can't do anything. Well, who's in charge of the OMB? I am. So you're just saying, I don't want to govern. I don't want to run the government. I'm in charge of this department, which is incredibly important in other administrations. And I'm telling you, we can't figure out anything. Forget it. I'm not even going to do my job.
Yeah.
Amazing.
They're being honest. But there is another spin on this that I want to turn to. Another one of the defenses that the GOP is currently using against the fairly disastrous CBO estimate of the effects of their new healthcare bill is that this is simply phase one, step one in a three-part plan, and you can't understand the actual effect of the bill until we get all three parts. And so here you're going to see both Tom Price and Paul Ryan rolling out this new talking point.
So what the report looked at was only one third of our plan. And that's why you can't look at this in isolation. Oh, but that's not the whole plan. That's the problem. They also ignored completely the other legislative activities that we'll be putting into place that will make certain that we have an insurance market that actually works. If you look at our entire package that the CBO didn't look at, not because they're bad folks, that's the way the rules work. They didn't look at all the regulations that we believe ought to go away. They didn't look at purchase across state lines or medical malpractice reform or all those those things that in their totality create a system that actually works better.
This is just part one of a three-part plan, and that's why I'm excited. Just this, they say, lowers premiums, stabilizes the market, gives people more choice and freedom. Part two is Tom Price at HHS brings more choice and competition, lets the states open up markets, which will lower prices even more. In part three are the other bills that we will be passing, interstate shopping across state lines, association healthcare plans to let people bulk buy insurance nationwide, medical liability reforms. What I'm encouraged is, once our reforms kick in, what the CBO is telling us is it's going to lower premiums. It will lower premiums 10%. It stabilizes the market.
Man, you don't want to be in a spot where you're talking about how, hey, premiums are going down, a voiceover to an image showing a huge sum of money of people are about to lose access
to health insurance.
On Fox News, yeah. And by the way, they did lead in their first segment about the CBO. It was, new CBO report, deficit will be reduced by $366 billion. That was the most important takeaway from that report.
By the way, Obamacare reduced deficit by about the same number. And what did they do? Oh my God, it's terrible. It's disastrous. Nobody was bragging about how it reduces deficit back when Obama did it. Okay, now to this talking point. Where did that come from? Nice little rabbit they just pulled out of a hat. I don't remember when they did the big launch. You remember in the press conference talking about a three-part Monty and all the three different steps they were going to do?
No.
I don't remember that. All of a sudden, oh yeah, this part might suck. But we have two other secret parts, and those parts are going to be awesome.
It's like you gave someone a gift, and you see the look on their face, and they're like, but that's just the first gift. I have other ones coming. Now, not everyone is buying this, and I don't just mean people sitting at this table right here. An up-and-coming Republican also not accepting this talking point. Here is Tom Cotton on with Hugh Hewitt.
What can be done? I've talked to the speaker. I've talked to the leader. I've talked to Kathy McMorris Rogers is on today. Mick Mulvaney, Tom Price. They all say it's a three-step dance because of the Senate reconciliation rule. So you know those rules. Working within the rules, how can the Senate improve its bills, or how can the House send to the Senate a bill that fits within the guardrails of reconciliation and allows for 51 votes that improves the individual market?
Hugh, there is no three-phase process. There is no three-step plan. That is just political talk. It's just politicians engaging in spin. This is why. Step one is a bill that can pass with 51 votes in the Senate. That's what we're working on right now. Step two, as yet unwritten regulations by Tom Price, which is going to be subject to court challenge and therefore perhaps the whims of the most liberal judge in America. But step three, some mythical legislation in the future that is going to garner Democratic support and help us get over 60 votes in the Senate. If we had those Democratic votes, we wouldn't need three steps. We would just be doing that right now on this legislation altogether. That's why it's so important that we get this legislation right, because there is no step three, and step two is not completely under our control.
So that's one of the most amazing things I've heard. And there's a couple of reasons why. Number one, that is a very conservative Republican who is very much controlled by the big donors. He's one of the biggest favorites of the big donors. And he just put a hatchet in the back of this plan. He's like, oh, your healthcare plan backed by Paul Ryan, Donald Trump, whatever. Wha-bam! Like, oh, sic de long, gone. Now, like, they got no chance of passing it in the Senate after Tom Cotton said that. The second reason why it's super surprising is because it was one of the most honest things I've ever heard from a Republican.
Yeah.
Where he's like, wait, if we had a mythical legislation that could pass the Senate and have Democrats support it, why didn't we release it in the beginning? Because, of course, we don't have one. That's very true. So what in the world is going on here? Why have the donors, because that's all Tom Cotton does. He's one of the top guys that represents the donors in the Senate. Why have the donors sent out Tom Cotton to bury this plan? It is really interesting.
Well, but I think part of it may be, and this is the part I can't figure out about the healthcare debate, it may be that it's not clear where the insurance industry is. If you're the insurance industry, there are things about Obamacare you don't like. There are things about Obamacare you do like.
Yeah.
You don't like the prohibition about throwing sick people off coverage because of a pre-existing condition. You don't like that. You do like the mandate. You actually do like more people having to or deciding to buy your products. So it's never been clear to me who the Republicans, at least initially, think in the donor class that, that they are serving. Because this isn't necessarily great. A repeal is not necessarily great for the insurance industry. Now, maybe the theory is that once we dismantle Obamacare, we take away the prohibitions, we deregulate the insurance market even more so that there's this, you know, they call it insurance across state lines. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, that sounds really great, right? It's insurance across state lines. Why can't the insurer, I live in Colorado, why can't the insurer in Utah provide insurance to me in Colorado? Because the regulations exist, because what would end up happening is all the insurers would go to the most unregulated yep. state possible, like a place like South Dakota or something like that, to provide the worst cover. They would all centralize there. So maybe the theory, the Republican theory, is sort of a two-step plan where we get rid of Obamacare, all the good things that people like in Obamacare, in order to get to a situation in which the insurance industry has even more unbridled control over the insurance market. But the interim step between there isn't necessarily great for the insurance industry or the American public.
Yeah.
No, this is weird. Normally, the Republicans don't do anything without the blessing of their giant donors. And here, you've got a very significant Republican split between Paul Ryan, who also is basically a water boy for the donors, and Tom Cotton. So maybe it's two different sets of donors.
Like, it could be that people like Tom Cotton are legitimately afraid politically of actually throwing millions of people off of insurance.
That's true. I mean, he's not the only
people. These people do come up for election. I'm not saying they don't want to serve their donors, but they're caught between.
I have never seen them care about voters this far out from election in my life. Mm-hmm. You see what I'm saying? Because at the end of the election cycle, what do? They just inundate you with ads paid for by their donors, and they don't concentrate any of this. They're ready to do those giant tax cuts, which are terrible to voters, for the rich, etc.
People know if they used to have insurance and now they don't. That's remember when I had access to healthcare?
My question about the Democrats is, you've had Donald Trump, who has said in the past he supports a single payer healthcare, mm-hmm. much like Medicare, is that where are the Democrats saying, okay, you want to repeal Obamacare? You want to replace Obamacare?
Yes.
Here's the most popular program in American history. Why don't we just have a one line bill that reduces the Medicare eligibility age to zero?
Yeah.
Okay. So,
and Bernie is pushing for that in town halls on MSNBC every week now.
So that's what I wanted to focus on at the end too. So this is a great point by David. So, they have complete dissension within the Republican Party now. I mean, Trump is now attacking Paul Ryan. We'll explain that in a different story. Tom Cotton is attacking Ryan. They're all attacking each other. So, and they don't have any good ideas, and they can't figure out how to make this thing work because some of the more centrist Republicans go, no, you're going to throw all these people off of insurance and I'm going to get killed in the next election, to your guys' point, right? And the conservative Republicans are going, no, I want even more for my donors. This is not draconian enough, right? So in the middle of this mess, Democratic Party, you might want to listen to Bernie Sanders. What could be a stroke of genius is to go, hey, lucky for the American people, we do have a repeal of Obamacare. What? Because every once in a while, a news anchor that got their talking points from the RNC says, how come the Democrats don't have an alternative? Well, first of all, they do. It's called Obamacare. Okay, but second of all,
they have alternatives to that.
They have an alternative to Obamacare. It's single payer or Medicare for all. It's such a simple idea. We already have Medicare. We just extend it to everybody, as David just said. Problem solved. And by the way, Medicare also has the extra advantage of being the second most popular program in America. Social Security is number one. Medicare is number two with about a 3/4 popularity, 75%. Have you ever seen anything with a 75% popularity rating? Certainly not Trump or Clinton or any other politician. So Democrats, wakey wakey, Medicare for all right now.
Except the failure of them to do that so far. And because you didn't mention one other point, which is that Medicare is a Democratic program, right? A big D Democratic Party program. So very popular, a Democratic Party legacy program, a solution basically that the rest of the industrialized world has adopted. So then the next question is, well, if you're not willing to do that, why are you not willing to offer that up?
We should now look to find reflection. Out if Democrats have ever gotten any money, campaign donations from health insurance companies.
I wonder.
Look into it.
Or the drug companies. I wonder if they've ever gotten
it's
money.
It's possible.
It is possible. Yeah. And if you remember, this came up during the Obamacare debate. they were going to lower the, there was a proposal out there to lower the Medicare age, eligibility age to 55. And if you remember, the person who led the charge, this was when the Democrats had 60 votes, it was Joe Lieberman.
Led the charge
against that and ended up killing that.
And so finally, what the Republicans are having trouble with is, well, how, you can't get all these things at once. Mm-hmm. How can you lower premiums, cover everybody, and lower the deficit all at the same time? There's actually only one proposal that does that, Medicare for All. And it's amazing. It's amazing. You, by the way, you're thinking, no, if you're an independent or you never, you know, covered this issue before, never thought about it, or you're Trump supporter or whatever, you're thinking, no, you guys are crazy. There's no magic bullet like that. How could it possibly do that? One of the ways that it does that is it takes out the middleman. The health insurance companies make billions upon billions, what, hundreds of billions, maybe trillions of dollars at being the middleman. So once you take that amount of money away and then you provide the health insurance directly, oh, voila, look
Jake,
at that.
It can't be done like every other country, industrialized country in the world does it. It can't be done even though every other country in the world
and
does it.
The final thing I would say, and this is a topic for another story, but when we talk about how to fix like the cost of healthcare in this country and how we improve access to it, and I wish that we had time to run that video about access from Tom Price, we focus on the end step. A person is already sick and needs care. We should think about the possibility of looking into bills that try to stop that from happening in the first place. You know, if our massive food companies didn't have so much control stopping necessary regulations from being put into place decades ago, people wouldn't have the sort of pervasive chronic conditions that make our healthcare so expensive in this country.
Oh man, you're speaking my language. I've always wondered, here's a thing I've always wondered. I've always wondered why the insurance companies, the health insurance companies, are not more of a lobbying force on bills like the Farm Bill. To create food policy. I mean, that's a whole, you can write a whole book on the connection between all these other things.
Yeah.
But the actual health insurance industry has an incentive to do that, and it has never been really all that much involved in that, and you're totally right. Other countries, they don't just have single-payer healthcare systems. Mm-hmm. They have all sorts of other food policies.
Transparency and on what's in the food,
exactly,
the effects of it.
Exactly, yeah. so that the cost doesn't spike at the end of healthcare where people are already sick.
Yes, they stop people from getting sick in the first place, but we don't even talk about that in this country.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break here. When we come back, that dramatic Breitbart story that I was telling you about, the Trump guys go after Paul Ryan in one of the most vicious ways I have ever seen. And it's almost inexplicable, but we're going to try to explain it. We're going to try to break it down and figure out in the words of Donald Trump, what the hell is going on when we return. All right, back on A Young Turks, David Sirota from International Business Times, where he's the senior editor for investigations. Watch out, Sirota will investigate.
I'm coming for you.
So in fact, Ruth Benedict says, is that David Sirota on The Young Turks? Happy days indeed. Okay, Mara QT writes, and Johnny Pie on TYT Live on Pie Day. Of course. Mara, you're not alone. Kim Orchard of Nerd Alert made the same observation earlier in the day,
yeah,
about how it's Pie Day, and I think later you're going to eat some sort of pie with somebody.
No, nobody. Is it International Pie Day? It is.
It's 3.14.
Yeah. Pie like the number.
Yeah.
Yeah, the number.
Not like eating pie.
No,
not like, because it's March 14th. No,
but that's the true American version.
Got it. Later, Sirota will investigate this so-called Pie Day.
Yes, so-called. And the money behind it.
I hear there's $3.14 million put into it. And who's getting a piece of that pie? Okay. Dan Campbell, oh, look at this. I made this stand up. I have a new gigantic iPad. Dan Campbell writes in, this Republican plan is just the first step. The next steps don't matter when the first step is off of the top of a cliff. So
that is good.
That's a good metaphor.
I like
that's
that.
That's right.
Yeah, that's good.
Jefferson Smith writes, and John got this totally right. Republicans were so excited to present this bill, then shocked when it is such a disaster. I think that's partly right, and we're going to see that in the next story. Chase Ibanez writes, in step one, gut health care and funnel hundreds of billions in tax dollars to the wealthy. Step two, I don't know. Step three, America's great again.
Also, a really fast point. I mean, to some extent, like, at the end of the day, they are accountable to their donors, not to their past actions. But when you spend years with the unifying theme of your party in government being, this is a terrible bill, it's going to end America, we have to attack it, and you try to repeal it dozens and dozens of times, And then, but things are changing over that time. People are starting to like the bill. They're starting to get used to certain parts of it. But you stick with that same message. At some point, people expect you, even if you no longer are all that committed to the repeal, that's all you've had for so long that you may have to throw something out. There might be some Republicans that are just, this is where we're at as a party. If we don't do it, our base is going to freak out, even though we know that the country has shifted quite a bit.
Right, and if you take the 10-year view, the thing I find fascinating about this whole thing is, you know, the idea of the Overton window, where the debate keeps shifting. So 10 years ago, we started out where this is the Heritage Foundation, basically, not exactly, but Obamacare is conceptually rooted in a Heritage Foundation plan, which became Romney Care, which became Obamacare, which now the Republicans are trying to get. So in some ways, the Republicans are eating their own plan. Right? Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying that Obamacare is a purely Republican plan, but if you take the trajectory, we've gone from this is basically a Republican compromise healthcare plan to the Republicans saying we must get rid of it.
Yeah.
They're essentially eating and trying to destroy their own concept from 10 years ago.
Yeah. Because their concept of governance is nihilism. So that's what you have. All right, last tweet is Miri writes in just before we did, started talking about it in the last segment. This infighting would be the perfect moment to introduce a single payer bill, just saying. Well, you know, we're like-minded on that, as you saw at the end of the segment. I want to thank a couple of donors to the Journalism Drive. It's tytnetwork.com/go to hire more journalists. $27 from Maria in Pennsylvania, $50 from Warren in North Carolina, and $50 from Diane in Illinois. You guys rock the world. And we've got a lot more where that came from. Let's go to the crazy Breitbart story.
That's true. Do we know where we're at?
Sure. We'll pull that up a little bit later for you guys.
Sounds good.
On where we are on the journalism drive, because we are almost at 1.5.
Ooh,
drums. Okay. Who will be announced soon? Okay. What's next?
Okay. Next, we got a little bit of fun for you and some speculation. We learned last October that Paul Ryan had been involved in a call where he was pretty critical of then candidate Donald Trump. Understand this is at a time when it didn't seem super likely that Trump would become president. Now, at the time, we didn't know all of the details, but now we do, because as of today, Breitbart has leaked the audio tape in what one of their former spokespeople is calling a continuing campaign to damage Paul Ryan, and that is understandable. You're going to agree, perhaps, after listening to this tape.
There are basically two things that I want to make really clear. As for myself as your speaker, I am not going to defend Donald Trump. Not now, not in the future. As you probably heard, I disinvited him from my first congressional district GOP event this weekend, a thing I do every year. And I'm not going to be campaigning with him over the next 30 days. Look, you guys know I have real concerns with our nominee. I hope you appreciate that I'm doing what I think is best for you or the members, not what's best for me. And so I want to do what's best for our members, and I think that this is the right thing to do. I'm going to focus my time on campaigning for House Republicans. To everyone on this call, this is going to be a turbulent month. Many of you on this call are facing tough reelections. Some of you are not. But with respect to Donald Trump, I would encourage you to do what you think is best and do what you feel you need to do. Personally, you need to decide what's best for you. And you all know what's best for you where you are. But the last thing I want to do is to help Hillary Clinton get the presidency and get Congress. So the last thing we want to be doing is giving Hillary Clinton a blank check in Congress. That's why I'm going to spend the rest of this month fighting for Congress, fighting for our majorities. I'm going to spend the next 28 days working hard with all of our members to get reelected, because we need a check on Hillary Clinton if Donald Trump and Mike Pence don't win the presidency. But I want to basically close with this. His comments are indefensible. They're not in keeping with our principles. So I'm not going to try to defend him. I'm going to focus on Congress.
Wow.
Okay. Not a man who thought that Trump was going to be president.
So I'm not saying wow at Paul Ryan's reaction to the Access Hollywood tapes. That was fairly normal at the time, as John pointed out. I'm saying wow that this got released at this juncture. So whoever released this, and we have a pretty good idea who, we'll get into that in a second, just wanted to shiv Paul Ryan in the biggest way when he is most vulnerable. So there's dissension within the Republican Party about Ryan's healthcare proposal. And releasing this tape now saying he never stood by Donald Trump is going up to him as he's going to the showers in the prison and going and letting him bleed out. So I haven't seen this kind of over the top political attack maybe ever within the same party in my lifetime. So when you then look at the heart of the Breitbart article, which released this tape, it says over and over again how Ryan, quote, abandoned the now president in the final crucial weeks leading up to the all important general election. And Ryan's decision to abandon Trump on the campaign trail has become a focal point in the healthcare negotiations. No, it hasn't. What are you talking about? You're the one who brought it up.
They mean we're trying to make it a focal point in negotiations.
And so, and I'm telling you, I'm just giving you a tiny taste of it. All throughout this very long article, it's Ryan, the betrayer of our beloved leader, Donald Trump. Oh my God. It is somebody in the White House. Obviously, we think it's Steve Bannon because he used to run Breitbart. He even did a purge of the people who disagreed with him before he left. So all he has is yes men left at Breitbart. But I actually think that one of the quotes makes me think it's not just Steve Bannon, that it might even be Trump himself. So one source, unnamed source in the White House said this quote within the article, the president gave Ryan a chance. Listen to how much this sounds like Donald Trump. The president gave Ryan a chance. If he doesn't get his act together soon, the president will have no choice but to step in and fix this on his own. He's the best negotiator on the planet. And if this were his bill and not Ryan's, it would not be this much of a mess. That's Trump.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and we know that Trump has a history of being telling a reporter, you can quote me off the record as an associate of Donald Trump, Trump himself. We know that that's happened in the past.
When he used the aliases of John Bannon, etc., he would often be his own unnamed source.
That's right. Yeah. That's interesting. That's really interesting. But my question would be on this is, if this was leaked by the White House, what does the White House want?
Exactly.
Would they want just a better bill?
Maybe they want Ryan scrambling, maybe getting Ryan to do something more favorable towards Trump. I honestly don't know.
No, no. The reason why I think there's some chance that it's Trump himself is because it's poorly thought out. Because it's such a mess. You look at this and go, how the hell does this help the Republicans?
Right?
That's why everybody's confused by it. Because normally you would do a strategy like, okay, I'm going to undercut Paul Ryan because he's too moderate, and I'm going to go in a more conservative. Okay, that's understandable, right? Now, in this case, they're saying, that Ryan, and he better withdraw that bill before he knows what's coming to him. But you publicly back Ryan's bill. So you're throwing yourself under a bus. It's the typical incompetence that you would see from Donald Trump because he's lashing out. Because why? He's got ADD, as everybody talks about. Yeah. So he's like, yeah, Ryan, I'm good. I'm with you. Good. Go, 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 right? Oh, no, it's not going well. Oh, I wouldn't have done this. You're the best. It's your fault. And what does he do? Like a child, he always blames someone else.
Yeah.
And this is one giant blaming someone else. It's so poorly thought out. I'm not even sure it's Steve Bannon. I'm telling you, it might be just the big guy himself.
Yes.
So they do like these QC things. Sorry, John, one quick second. They say Ryan has been unwilling to negotiate on the specifics of this bill. This is all, again, from the article, obviously like typed over and sent to Breitbart, right, by the White House. And they keep Trump and his true allies, despite what Ryan's allies inside the White House say publicly, have been much more willing to negotiate. Trump's trying to send a message. And then he labels it Obamacare 2.0, Obamacare Light, Ryan Care, Rhino Care. All of a sudden, it's Ryan Care. Before everybody was calling it Trump Care, now that it's going under, Ryan Care on me.
So this is supposed to, that's from Breitbart, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that's not an editorial. That's their news reporting. Yeah. God, they suck. They want to be a reputable news organization. I can't read that because it's spinning so fast.
Yeah, but anyway. No, you're absolutely right, John. The other thing that I got out of this article is this read like an old Soviet press release, or not even a press release, but like what they would print in Pravda.
True allies, you know, right. And loyalists, and
that's
very
right.
Focused on loyalty.
The allies of the cause say this, whereas some have betrayed the cause.
Yeah,
and it's so over the top. You're like, who can believe this?
It's just not clear what he wants.
Well,
he's not be embarrassed. He doesn't want to be tied to a bill that is a disaster. Mm-hmm. But it's not clear what he policy wise, what he or the White House actually wants. Like, this is your bill.
Well, he said he had a couple of goals he laid out, you know, getting prices, quote, way, way down. Everybody's covered. Deductibles are lower. He specifically said deductibles will be lower. But then when the actual bill comes out and all, he's totally hands off. I heard he was a great negotiator. I don't see any negotiating. They're not really talking about the bill unless they're specifically asked in a press briefing. Trump is talking very little about it, although he has tweeted a couple of basically references to the next steps will be better. But where is he during all of this?
Okay, so I don't like to speculate too much without any basic facts, but this seems like
a
fact-free vacuum now. This healthcare debate.
We have so little facts here. We don't even have time for alternative facts.
Right, exactly. but I wonder if Trump's strategy. I'm throwing it out there. I wonder if his strategy is Ryan will propose and the Republicans will push a detailed bill that is a disaster, or not a disaster, looking like it's a disaster. And my negotiating position will be to do one little piece of it, like the state lines thing, deregulate across state lines, let insurance companies sell across state lines. And then I will eventually sign on to that little, relatively little piece, preserve the rest of Obamacare, but say that because we took that one piece and passed it, that is a, quote, repeal of Obamacare. I mean, there's got to be an exit strategy for Trump out of this, right? I mean, there's got to be, in theory, some exit strategy to this rather than just throwing 26 million people off healthcare. Yeah.
So I have two kind of answers to your questions, right? And to your theory. So part one is people are always trying to figure out what Trump thinks. Remember, Trump doesn't know what he thinks. Like the one common mistake that everybody makes over and over again is they underestimate how stupid he is. So he never had a plan. And in this article, you can see it thrashing about wildly. Like, oh, conservative groups are upset. There's these Tea Party patriots that are upset. And the conservative groups are, that's, and plus it won't pass the Senate because of the moderate Republicans. Well, how can you cure both of those things at the same time? Either you go right, in which case the right wing is happy, but those moderate Republicans will never vote for it. It has no chance of passage. And you keep talking about how the arithmetic doesn't add up in the Senate. Or you make the moderate Republicans, such as they are, happy, and then the Heritage Foundation and the Tea Party patriots will hate you even more. But the so how do you answer that? The answer is Trump doesn't know. He doesn't know the difference between the Tea Party guys and the moderate guys, and he's never thought it through, and he thinks that there are always magic answers. Oh yeah, of course, we'll make it for everybody, and it'll be lower, and it'll cover. Why won't it cover?
It'll be beautiful.
It'll be beautiful. He's an impetuous child. He's like, why can't I have everything? Why can't it cover everything? It's Paul Ryan's fault. It's his fault. If I had done it, again, here's another reference here to Trump is a lot more willing to wheel and deal on this front than Ryan. It's Trump who wrote this thing. Okay.
Wheel and deal.
So, who writes also, wheel and deal? And that's not a quote from anybody. That's in the article.
Oh, wow. Oh, my God. They suck. Jesus. Yeah. And look, he's also a guy who, I don't know him, but everybody says that he's willing to throw his allies under the bus. He likes to stick the shiv in. He thinks at the end of the day, what's important is what makes him look good and makes him look successful. He may actually think that he can torpedo Ryan, torpedo this current effort, make Ryan look terrible, that whole thing goes down in flames, not realizing that as president, he's not independent of his party in Congress. If he wants the rest of his agenda to be worked on, having the first huge thing you work on totally sink, totally fail, hurts him too, but he's such a self-centered person that he may not realize that that's even how it functions.
I don't understand what the exit strategy is.
So I'm going to explain the Republican exit strategy in a second, because in the midst of this article, through the madness, I think I figured out what their actual plan is, and Ted Cruz has it. Trump doesn't have it, Ryan doesn't have it, Ted Cruz has it. So, but it, to all your guys' point, the Trump is short-sighted, and so he just thinks, how do I win the moment now?
Yeah.
The only thing that matters
he lives
is
totally in the present.
Yeah, in this media minute, how do I win this media minute?
Yeah.
I'm losing terribly. This is a mess. I'm not winning anymore. So what am I going to do? First thing is blame it on someone else. That's go-to move number one. Then I'll figure out things after that, right? And it's too conservative, and it's too liberal. You're not winning, not me. Okay, all right. We've talked about that. Now the exit strategy. So in the midst of this, they explain that Ted Cruz thinks, well, we don't need 60 votes. The Democrats are going to filibuster this thing, like we filibustered everything when the Democrats were in charge. The Democrats needed 60 votes for Obamacare, but we don't need it, and we can do reconciliation. Now, that it only applies to just budgetary issues. They cannot use it for most of the bill. Now, how is he going to get around it? He says, oh, I came up with a new idea. The vice president has constitutional authority to just pass things with 50 votes. What? That's not a thing that exists. But they're Republicans, they don't care. So the idea that I think that Cruz and the conservatives are hatching is, hey guys, make the bill even more conservative. Go in the direction that, and there's one reference in this long article about you didn't understand how to do it the Trump way. That Ryan never understood the Trump way. I think the Trump way that they're referring to is just go full bore right. Don't worry about any of the moderates or Democrats or anything like that. Just go get all the right-wing Republicans you can. We'll just change the rules so that Mike Pence has some magical constitutional authority to get rid of Senate rules. And he could be the parliamentarian that decides how to apply the rules, including reconciliation. And we'll just say it applies to the whole bill and he just magically does that. That way we only need 50 votes. I could even lose Susan Collins and other and another moderate Republican. If I hold my conservatives, boom, we pass it. So that is probably, honestly, their best hope. But that is
a precedent.
Yeah, that is a tiny, you know, you got to thread that needle pretty hard to get into there.
And then he thinks, if he's thinking ahead at all, that having lots of people lose their health care under his bill or Paul Ryan care or Trump, whatever you want to call it, that'll help him in the election?
See, again, not thinking
that far.
This
is not thinking that far. That's like way too far.
Yeah. And by the way, that Cruz idea, it's not like it's Trump's idea, right? Trump doesn't know what the hell he's doing. The conservatives are pushing in that direction. They think we can get it done. And for the guys at the Heritage Foundation and the Koch brothers and all those donors, to them, yeah, the 26 million losing their health insurance, or actually under the new draconian plan, it'll probably be 30 million or more. It's like, wait. Are they my donors? Are they my voters? Yeah. Are they my family? No, then why would I care? The Trump way is, I don't give a damn about you, right? I only care about myself. That's it, that's the Trump way. So we can convince Trump to go hard right and jam this thing through and damn the torpedoes.
It's a combination of, on some level, not really caring. I mean, they were perfectly happy with the way things were before Obamacare, when tons and tons of people that currently have health insurance didn't. But then you combine it with some of them actually believe that you take off the regulations and all the, you lower the taxes and all that. And yeah, the country's going to do great. That's the perfect solution to all of your concerns about the human cost of their bills, is we truly believe that this will stimulate the economy, blah, blah, blah. They thought it with George W. Bush's tax cuts. We saw the end result of that. And a lot of them probably think it now.
You know, I don't want to get too deep into that debate, but I actually think almost none of them actually believe that.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm straining the definition of the word believe.
Right.
But everybody has to sleep at the end of the day.
Allege.
They certainly allege.
Yeah,
But it's a convenient fiction to allow you to continue on in a world, see human suffering and not care. Okay, yeah. We have a lot of those, actually.
All right, we got to do the Jared Kushner story.
We do. Ah, man, this hour has flown by. Jesus. Jared Kushner's family corporation is in the final stages of an extremely lucrative real estate deal with a Chinese corporation. Bloomberg reports that Anbang Insurance Group plans to strike a $4 billion deal to invest in Kushner Company's office tower that's located at 666 Fifth Avenue in Manhattan. You know, I didn't even notice that until now. Is it really 666?
It is.
Wow. Okay. Well, this is a devil of a deal right here. The deal values that particular building at $2.85 billion, which, if you're keeping track, is the highest value ever given for a building in Manhattan. Weird how that works out, but it did. And Jared Kushner's family will yield at least $400 million personally out of this deal. Now, let's break down a little bit of how they're going to get that money. A portion of the deal pays off a vast portion of $250 million in debt that company has incurred since the last time they refinanced their debt. Under the terms of the deal, as they stand right now, the Kushners will be able to retire that debt by paying off just $50 million, 20% of the total amount. And so if you talk to real estate experts, of which I am not and know almost nothing, they're saying that this does seem, and even to me, it seems like a particularly good value for Kushner. Now, it is the family, I should say, rather than just Jared Kushner personally. Now, it's possible that the building, that real estate is booming and things are working out for Manhattan again, but people are saying that this is not a building that has typically done very well. The idea that you would value it so highly seems odd. And the timing is, of course, suspect. I mean, we're all a little bit concerned about the possible conflicts of interest between Trump and his circle and Chinese corporations. He just got those 36 or 38 pending trademarks passed a couple of weeks ago. Now, we do have to take note that Jared Kushner sold his personal ownership stake in 666 Fifth to avoid any conflicts of interest. And so, of course, there can't be a conflict of interest because it's just his family that would be enriched. And who would be affected by that?
I'm sure he won't inherit any of that money or use it in any other way. Okay, so look, in this deal, the devil's in the details. And I do know real estate a little bit. I worked on it at a small scale, and I know a lot of folks who are working on it on a very large scale. So now, if they make $400 million on a transaction of this size, it's not earth-shaking. That's a good deal, and they got a nice return on it. But it doesn't necessarily raise eyebrows in a normal situation. But this is not quite normal because the building was not doing well. It was not in a position to turn a great profit, let alone any profit. So if the building, it was booming times, and the building's doing well, and it's in Manhattan, and it's a prestige building, I don't think that this story is interesting. But given that the building was not doing well, it gets rescued, then there's a strange matter of they've got an extra $250 million loan that gets knocked down to a $50 million loan. It doesn't work that way. Where the hell did that extra $200 million go? It went, somebody else paid for it. Nobody goes, hey, you know what? I know that you just made a huge profit on this deal, but you don't have to pay me back $200 million. That's not a thing that happens in the world, right? So somebody got paid back that $200 million. So who paid him the $200 million? What does it mean that they only had to pay 20% of it? That is so weird. Now, this Anbang Insurance Group is so connected to Chinese government that when they bought the Waldorf Astoria, President Obama refused to stay there because they were worried that it would be wiretapped by the Chinese government in the middle of New York. Okay, so this is deeply connected to the Chinese government. All of a sudden, the Kushners, who were struggling with this building, get handed a giant gift by a company tied to the Chinese government. Well, what a lucky break they got.
Yeah.
Look, this is deeply disturbing. I mean, these guys are brazen. They didn't wait a year and a half. They didn't even wait 2 months. And they're like, oh, we have a little trouble. Who knows how long Trump's gonna be in office, right? Cash in, cash in, cash in. And now, to be quote unquote fair to them, this is an old political trick. They're not the Trumps and the Kushners are not the first to do it. Neil Bush profited off the Bush family for years and years. He'd do all these sketchy deals because his last name ended in a Bush. And they were trying to get favors from George W. Bush and his dad. George W. Bush got bailed out by the Saudis when his dad was president. And when he had failing oil businesses in Texas, he's Republican presidents. They are so incompetent business-wise. Mm-hmm. Bush couldn't make an oil business in Texas work. Trump couldn't make casinos work. And all of a sudden, of course, here comes these foreign interests, the Saudis, the Russians, the Chinese, to keep on bailing them out, and later they become president. Well, that's a win-win for all of them and a giant loss for the American people because they're not serving us, they're serving those folks.
Yeah. I mean, my view on this deal is to be clear, is that the New York Times did a big expose into the amount of foreign money that is going in generally into real estate. That Russian oligarchs, the Chinese government, places where there's huge masses of relatively new money, if you will, needs a place to be parked. And they trace back how in New York and in Los Angeles that there's more and more foreign money being invested in real estate as a place to simply park investments. So it's hard to know whether this is that trend or this is that trend plus an attempt to buy influence with Trump's circle. I think the political question here that's really important is, if you know that this is a trend that's going on and you're the Kushner family tied to Trump, the fact that there's no attempt to even prevent a image of a potential problem.
Yeah.
That it's just, forget it. We don't even care what it looks like. Maybe it's something, maybe it's nothing, but we don't care what it may look like or what questions it raises. That's the kind of new paradigm we're living in where there's no pretense. It's the brazenness. There's no pretense.
Yeah. In the past, you would have been worried about the appearance of a conflict of interest.
Right.
They're like, appearance? Let's just do the real thing.
Right.
And who cares what happens? It's the Trump way. So, and I want to give just one more piece of context here, because it's true that New York is flooded by foreign money, and it's a lot of time people who are trying to launder the money and get it out of their home countries. Yeah. And so it could be a twofer that they want to do that and get some political clout along the way, because this is a big payoff for just hiding your money.
Right, look,
right? There's safer and smarter ways to hide your money.
If you're looking to park your money in New York in general, and you're a government with business before Trump, you're like, I got plenty of different places I could invest. Oh, wait, that one I already want to buy in New York. Oh, that's owned by the Kushners. Oh, that's like a bonus, right? I can make
that's
them
not
some
over
money.
Their head. They know
that's right.
At least how it will appear, whether that's their initial motivation or not. And I don't know that we've talked about it on the show, but there's been a couple of stories over the past, I guess, 2 weeks or so of some massive payments for buildings to Donald Trump. The $90 million for that one building that was apparently run down and never ended up being used. Now, I don't believe in any of those cases it was Chinese corporations, but these things do have a way of happening. And we also know that it looks like one of their strategies might be that if we had one instance of clear corruption, it's easy to investigate that and it looks bad. But man, if you just put something out every week, every 5 days or so,
flood the zone theory.
You flood them. And are we going to be talking about this in a week?
Yeah.
I don't know. And I can personally assure it, but I can't.
So, and again, context, Vornado Realty Trust made a killing on this deal, but they in a lot of ways deserve that to make that, because Jared Kushner originally brought the building. This was his big thing. Like, hey, dad, you used to run real estate just like Trump. I got this now, daddy. And he bought the building in 07. Oops. Right before the crash. So Vornado came in and bought 49.5% of the building right after the crash. And they got it for a song. So when they exited in this deal, they made like tenfold their money. But that's not a problem. That was a smart deal on their part, right? And so, but Kushner did not, he bought it when it was high. So it was much harder for him to exit with a profit, and somehow he did anyway. I mean, Bloomberg originally broke the story, and they tried to give both sides as much as they could. So they went to Scott Singer, and he's a guy who works in real estate, and he's got his name on it. He doesn't want to throw these guys under a bus. So he says the deal was aggressive, but not absurd. Like, the best defense they could find was not absurd. Okay. Joshua Stein on the other side, another New York real estate lawyer, says, this is a huge, huge exit strategy for an office building. It's a home run of a transaction, to give you the proper context.
Yeah.
And finally, one little extra bit of skirting the law. They're using EB-5 here to also get people a pathway to citizenship for China. So they get to park their money, plus they're going to get citizenship. But you're only allowed to use EB-5 in projects that create jobs in economically distressed areas. Mm-hmm. It's Fifth Avenue. It's literally the least distressed area on the planet.
Well, we know it's not distressed. Apparently, the real estate's worth way more than it used to be.
That's exactly right. Man, they are so brazen. They don't care about the law at all. All right, we are unfortunately out of time. There's a lot of great stories in the news today, but those are big, big ones.
Yeah.
David Sirota, thanks for coming in. Everybody check out International Business Times, where David writes regularly.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, guys.
All right. We'll be back with Jordan Chariton and some amazing stories in the second hour, including that Fukushima story, which has facts that it's hard to imagine.
Yeah. We don't think it'll bore you.
No. It is amazing. Let alone the corruption of Rex Tillerson and how he was, which leads to a super fun poll about the dumbest Republican aliases. So we'll do that when we come back.